This is Maria Buyukos.
And this is Zachary Richard Hill.
And you're listening to Creative Honey. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Creative Honey podcast. Maria and Zach here again.
Hey, everybody.
We have another treat for you today. We're going to be interviewing Nate Ryan from Toy, and he's such a fun person to talk with. We actually interviewed him a while ago, so it's really nice to have him back on here.
Yeah, Nate's a really good friend of mine, really close friend, and he runs Toy Creative, and he really has a lot of insight on the business behind creativity and design specifically, running a design agency, and he's really building a really cool thing with Toy. So we're looking forward to talking to him today, so stay tuned.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
What's up, man? Good to have you back on again and take our conversations that we have off the mic and bring it live, for the people,
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. Anything for the people and anything for you guys. But before we really get going, I have to tell you that because this is live and it's off the cuff, at some point my dog is probably going to start barking because my wife is going to get home. So we'll just assume that whatever we're talking about that he starts barking to, he's totally against. He does not agree with
it. If we didn't have canine opposition, it wouldn't be like a real podcast. So we're totally okay with that.
Okay, good. I just wanted to make clear, whatever we're talking about, when he starts barking, he does not agree.
Sounds good to us. I think this will make for a little extra of a layer of interest.
It's a good game.
Yeah, definitely.
All right.
Okay, so yeah, man, we're talking about creative education today, and we were talking about this just now a little bit off air about how we all have different kind of backgrounds when it comes to kind of education. I think it's just a really diverse and well-rounded topic, especially today, because it's really easy to kind of teach yourself and learn without having to pay for education, but we all have different backgrounds when it comes to that. So you guys want to talk about that a little bit? All three of us kind of give our creative education backgrounds a little bit. You guys want to do that first?
Yeah, for sure. Nate, why don't you go ahead and tell us how you got educated in graphic design?
Sure. So I went to a community college and, right out of high school, and really wasn't sure what I wanted to study at all. So I kind of bounced around. I did, I took a few music business classes because I played in a band at the time and thought maybe I'd want to be a producer or I'd want to get involved in a label or something like that. And then I took some fairly generic business courses. And then I started taking some design courses and really enjoyed it. And, this was in 2007, 2008, and the crash was happening. And really, at that point, you just start thinking, well, what's going to get me a job?
Like, of course, yeah.
What is going to make me employable? And so I wish I could say that I had some really, thoughtful reason for why I got into design. But I just started noticing that people that I knew would pay me if I could design a logo for them or if I could, use Photoshop to put some colors on top of an image. And so I just thought, well, I should take some design classes and see what happens. And so I had taken probably three classes. I took a typography class. I took a graphic design 101 class. And I think I took a graphic design 2 class. I think that's as far as I got. And at that point, I just kind of started telling people I was a designer. Right. I didn't even really, I didn't even fake it till I made it. I just pretended I had totally made it and started telling people that. I just kind of started telling people that's what I did and self-identifying as a graphic designer, and ran into a family friend who I had known my whole life, but I had no idea he was actually in the design world. And I ran into him at a Starbucks, and I was designing business cards for myself, and they were horrible. I mean, they were like, I look back on them now, and that I feel like when you start studying design, you feel like the smaller you make your typography, or at least this was the case back then, like the smaller you make your typography, the more sophisticated it is. You know? And so my business cards had like 4.25 point type on an image, and like you couldn't read it at all. But this family friend that found me at the Starbucks asked what I was doing. I showed him the design. He just kind of gave one of those like, huh, okay, so you're a designer sort of things. And I was like, yeah, you know, I'm starting a business. And he's like, well, you should come down to my studio sometime. So I go down, and I'll condense this really quick, as quickly as I can. But I go down to his studio. Turns out he's the guy who's responsible for creating the specialty packaging for pretty much every major Disney film that you can think of. Oh, so, you know, Pearl Harbor, you know, on the what was it? I guess at the time it would have been like the, you know, 55th anniversary or something along those lines. They were re-releasing the film and they were doing some crazy packaging for it. And, it, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean and Roger Rabbit and,
that's some good stuff, yeah.
City, all this crazy stuff, and it's just like just this guy in his own studio, you know, charging $250 to $1.25 million per project, and it's
that's
just
a small
him.
Budget.
And so he let they're nice. They were nice budgets, yeah. But he let me just kind of sit in and learn from him.
That's great.
And I would go down, you know, at 8 a.m. and I'd have a class at like noon. So I'd go down from like 8 to 11 in Burbank and work with him for a few hours and answer emails and then go back and go to class. And eventually, once I learned that he was going to start working for Disney as like a VP of creative for one of their startup divisions, and he wanted me to go with him. Once he made it clear to me that he wanted me to work with him at Disney, I pretty much just stopped showing up to school altogether.
Yeah, totally understandable, of course.
And I actually emailed my teacher and I was like, hey, teacher's name was Kevin. And I was like, hey, Kevin, what?
I know Kevin. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, hey, Kevin, here's what's happening. What would you do if you were me? And he's like, oh, I'd totally cut out. I'm like, all right, great.
Yeah. I would imagine that would be most. If a teacher really cared about you, I'm imagining that would be the answer pretty much every time. Mm-hmm. I know, yeah. I would say that if I was a teacher, like, don't ever come to my class again. Go.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of my, I mean, as far as, you know, what you would classify as like higher education about design, that's kind of the end of that story. I would classify what I did with Disney as education, but
absolutely.
Not in the sense of what we're talking about.
Well,
today.
Actually, yeah, no, I was going to say, like, actually it is. And kind of what I'm trying to get at with the topic, I don't know if Maria agrees, but, you know, creative education today is, I think it's much more of a complicated definition than it used to be. So I think what you experienced is definitely education. I was going to mention your education came, it began with a little bit of schooling, but it was really on the job education and on the job training. And with a little bit of kind of like, you know, learning, you do it yourself kind of mentality, which is definitely a really valuable route to go, you know? So Maria, why don't you tell everyone a little bit about your education?
Okay. So yeah, I had, as we were talking about, a career pivot type of situation. So I went to Cal Poly Pomona for landscape architecture and I completed the program. And you learn a lot about, I mean, it's a very heavy, like intense design, you know, but you're designing, you know, architecture is just a lot different. Like, you know, you have to worry about all these environmental factors and like, you know, people, if you do something wrong, you know, people might die or like you might devastate an entire animal population or something. So I came from that kind of area. And then, of course, I graduated during like, you know, that whole economic downturn thing. And
Like 2008
yeah,
changed
everyone's
lives.
I'm not sure if you guys remember
basically.
That, but yeah. so
I think unfortunately, a lot of people have forgotten it.
Yeah,
that's very true.
Let's just hammer that home today. That sucked.
Remember that when terrible. The economy almost completely obliterated itself? Don't forget that, people.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, I mean it was really bad when I started. I started like literally on the cusp of 2008. That's when I started school. So. Like it was 2007 for one part of my first year, and then it's 2008. And then literally it was just like, you know, the whole thing was, you know, all my teachers are getting cut and all this stuff. It was pretty tough. I couldn't get classes really easily. And so, you know, about third year, one of my professors, like during our final lecture was like, well guys, looks like you're kind of screwed. Like I don't see any opportunities for you guys out there. Not for the next like 3 to 5+ years. So you guys got to figure out what you're going to do. And third year was the hardest year. Cause we had a lot of, like civil engineering type stuff. And so, those of us that made it through, that was like a little bit devastating. So I started to think at that point, like what other stuff could I get into? And I actually, went into, I think it was third year. I started doing this again, but, started doing like high fashion jewelry stuff, like, with recyclables. So that's kind of one foray I took. And then, after a while, like I wasn't really producing an income from that. It was getting really hard as a college graduate. So, you know, I've always loved graphics. So I started to self-teach my, you know, more graphic design based stuff. So I took what I learned from architecture, which was a lot of software and stuff, and then kind of repurposed that for graphic design. And that took a couple years to really, you know, get in there and learn the other way to do things. And it was a really interesting experience. So at least I had the design principles, but it was like the techniques and all that stuff was really interesting trying to learn that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But it's been fun though. And, I really enjoy that learning self teaching process.
Yeah. So Maria kind of, she did like, she said like this pivot, but she has a little bit of like academic education with the degree. But I think you guys have something in common where you still pivoted and, you know, started teaching yourself some things about design, graphic design specifically. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what led you guys to where you are, you know. So I think that's great. And for me, I bounced around early. You know, Nate and I have known each other for a while. I was like a painter at first. I was a writer. I was a musician too. I was all over the place. And then I know, Nate, you talked about like, look, seeing other people getting work through design. And that's ironic because I saw you doing the same thing. You know what I mean? I was like, wow, I really love what Nate is doing with design and he's really building a career out of it. I kind of want to do that too, you know? And then I went from once I decided that's what I really wanted to do, I went a very traditional route in the sense where like, okay, I'm very passionate about design. That's what I want to do. So I went to school for it and it took me a long time, but I went to Cal State University, Channel Islands for graphic design. And that's what I studied for the most part. So I was unorthodox at first, you know, just kind of trying to discover myself. But then I went a very traditional route at the end of the day. And I think there's definitely pros and cons of that as well. Mm-hmm. Definitely cons. And I think that's, you know, now that we have everyone's background, you know, with when it comes to their education, we could kind of talk about kind of the pluses and minuses maybe of having a private school education, a public school education, or totally learning on your own. Like, Nate, do you have, you know, any comments on that? And just like, what do you see? Or what are some of the good and the bad you see in kind of creative education today in general?
I'd actually be more curious what your thoughts are there, since you did creative education. You know, you went through the UC system, so I'd be more curious what your experience was there. And then I can give you some of my thoughts, but since you have experience with it,
okay, that's totally fair. I think after going through it, I think it's just, it depends on what kind of learner you are. Mm-hmm. I think that's a big thing for me. I knew because I was kind of older when I got into design, and I was, you know, I spent most of my high school years without the internet. So I spent most of my formative years pre-internet because I'm a little older than you guys. And I bring that up because, like, I was...
You are pretty old.
I know. Thank you. I am. I'm not much older than you guys, but I'm a little older. Anyway.
You're old, man.
Okay, good. Yeah, we can establish that for sure. I'm old, but wise, I guess. No, I'm kidding.
Very wise.
Yeah, oh, thank you. I appreciate that. What I was trying to get at is that I came from the generation where it's like you need to like learn from somebody and someone needs to teach you. And I bring that up because I know I needed that. Like, I didn't go to school for the degree specifically. I mean, that was a nice, caveat or bonus for sure, like having the degree. But I went to school to learn the skills, like to learn the trade. And I felt like I couldn't really, like, just teach myself. Now I feel that I can, if that makes sense. Like, okay, I have the foundation from school, so if I want to learn a new skill or a new technique or a new style, whatever, when it comes to design, I feel like I could do that now. But I felt like I needed someone to help me lay down the foundation for me. And that was why I went to school. So I don't know what you guys... That's kind of the main takeaway for me personally. I don't know what you guys have to think about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that was one thing I wrote down before we got on here. Is it really does largely depend on your learning style, right? Yeah. Like, if you need...
Yeah.
I feel like I'm the kind of person who always needed real world incentives to learn. Like I needed to feel like I wasn't going to be able to pay my bills in order to really just hunker down and focus and learn what I needed to learn. So I just kind of jumped into the workforce. That was what made the most sense to me. And granted, I probably would have finished school had I not had the opportunity to go work with Disney like I did.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have done the same thing.
Yeah,
for sure.
Right. Right, but I feel like if you prefer learning from others, then school, it makes the most sense. And I think another thing to note here is that, you know, like yourself, Zach, you can kind of do both. I mean, you can go to school and be in school, and then the good thing about being in school is you do have 3 months off of the summer, and you have breaks.
Yeah.
So you can take jobs on while you're going to
exactly.
school.
I would argue that you should do both. You know,
right. Like, yeah.
For me personally, I started really getting into freelancing and doing jobs outside of school and work outside of school long before I actually graduated. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think if I would agree in a sense where, because we have a lot of students that listen to the podcast, I would mm-hmm. tell them that they're making a big mistake if they're going to school and just expecting that all their teachers have to do is just give them this knowledge and this skill and everything's going to be fine. They have to take some initiative. They have to learn on their own. They really got to push, you know?
Totally.
Yeah. So I completely agree with that.
Well, and I feel like that is, you know, there are so many areas of life that I think probably because of the 08 crash, our generation and our people in our age range are probably more likely to look at the two options that everybody feels like they have and just say, like, why not both?
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
You know, like, why choose? Why not just take the good things from both of them and figure out a way to make it work, right? And I think, Maria, I would love to hear how you feel about this too, but I feel like for me, the biggest cons for a formal education could just be as simple as, the money you're spending, the debt that's associated
yes.
with going, because, you know, I was looking at some data and I think it's about a $10,000-$11,000 a year difference in terms of like a starting salary for a designer with or without a degree. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a degree, you're likely, based on some information from Rasmussen, to be like $65,000 a year. And without it, the average salary is about $54,000. Which is good. I mean, an additional $11,000 a year is a good thing, but I would be curious to know how much of that money is actually going in your pocket and how much of it is just going to go directly to paying off that loan.
Oh, man, Nate, I can tell you. I can tell you all about that.
Yeah.
No,
I'd love to hear all about that.
Yeah, no, it's seriously the debt. I mean, okay, first of all, to be fair, I chose like one of the most expensive, like I went to a Cal State, but like the program was one of the most expensive programs you could go through. It's one of the most expensive majors because it's a lot of supplies, like very specialized supplies and really huge prints that are like $100 a piece and stuff every time. And and the housing, you know, being on campus and all that, like, it really adds up, and I had to take a pretty substantial, like, loan to just to go to school. So, and still, it just, like, it just hangs over your head all the time, like a big burden, like, yeah, you know, totally. Yeah. So it's very, that's like the one big, like, thing that I think like other people I know who have taken out loans, they're, you know, it's a big stressor. It's always in the back of your mind.
If I could jump in here, I also think you could, I'm not saying that Maria did it wrong, but I also, because she's very educated, and I think it comes out in the way she designs and the way she talks about design. Mm-hmm. And I'm always really impressed with what she has to say on the topic.
Thank you.
I'm biased a little bit, of course, but yeah. But at the same time, like, you could also go to school a little more effectively, and I'm not saying that I did it the best way, but my student loan is like minuscule.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
You know, and because I went to community college first, I applied for a couple of grants, and I still have student loan, but it's minuscule. So I think it's a major con, and I think it's something you need to worry about, the debt you're gonna accumulate. You know, by going to school. But I think by going the public route and maybe going to community college first, you could kind of limit your debt or have a little bit more control of it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And I feel like that is, you know, for most, even for me, like if I were going to go back now, I would actually have no clue how to navigate that correctly. You know, and I think that's probably the, in my mind, at least, that's the biggest factor for, because I would go back right now.
Right.
I actually would, you know, and I would advocate for anybody that could go to go. I mean, because I think that there are, at least from my vantage point, there are definite cons to going, but really the cons boil down to, you know, more practical things than like subjective things. You know, more objective than subjective. So it really does boil down to, in my mind, something like, how are you going to know that you're going to be able to pay this off, and you're not going to be hung with this millstone around your neck the second you get out?
Right.
And you know, going to have to, you're going to be forced to go take a job, you know, waiting tables and never have time to use the skill that you picked up while you were in school. And so for me, it's like all the other cons, like, you know, you learn a bunch of styles throughout your time in school, but maybe those styles are not immediately applicable in the market, or,
right.
You know, you get this portfolio together, but in my experience, you know, vetting people who are sending us their resumes at Toy, the way that schools teach people to present themselves to design firms is not always the best. It comes across very robotic. It's not. So there are all these things that I feel like are, you know, quote unquote cons, but they're easy things to push out of. Once you get enough real world experience, you can mold yourself into what you need to be in terms of being employable. But I feel like the bigger cons are those more objective things like the debt associated with it, and you know how rapidly an industry, especially like design or development, is going to change, and how slowly most schools pick up those disciplines. So
yeah.
You know, by the time you get out of a 4-year school that had curriculum that was decided before you even started, a lot of the mediums have changed. So you learn the principles, but so those are the things that I feel like are the potential downsides. But that, for me, as someone who didn't go, those aren't necessarily reasons not to go, as long as you're smart and you're plugged in outside of it, which is to go back
yes.
to what we
great
were
point.
About
That's
before.
A great point.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, which is that you can do both. If you're going to go, just go in a way that is smart. And also make a commitment to do some real world work on the side as well.
Yeah. No, I think that there's like so many good points there, but like two I could take away from that is, one, I think yeah, doing work outside of the classroom, I think, is really important. And I've actually started to see some even public universities starting to realize, let's get our students out there. Like, let's get them meeting, you know, people like you that are running a firm, you know, running an agency. And then also people that are doing freelance work, people that are studios, try to get them out there doing this more often and earlier. And I think it goes to, like, if you're going to go to school, be aware of how good is their design program or their art program or their photography program, you know, and, you know, what's going on there, you know, and what are they teaching you that's going to get you prepared for the real world? And secondly, be intentional about what you want to learn and how you learn. And because for me, like, not only did I go to school, I was very intentional on the kinds of design that I wanted to learn that I felt would make me more valuable and employable. Like, so I focused on, like, packaging, flat design and illustration, and motion design, because I felt like, okay, those three things are going to be valuable, like, when I graduate, you know, because like other things come and go. But I said, okay, people want things to move now. Flat's really popular on the web, and print might die, but we still need to put stuff in things to sell, you know? So
yeah,
this is literally what I was telling myself, you know? Yeah. So that's why I focus on those things. So, you know, be cognitive of what you're learning and how you're learning it and where you're learning it. Right, Maria?
Yeah, no, that's a great point too, because, you know, like sometimes, like when you're just first going into a program or something, like the tendency is to just like look up to what your teachers are saying and just like want to do everything they're telling you to do because you're like, they must have the magical answer. But like taking the initiative to really understand what you want to do with that education and focusing on it is a really great idea. And that's,
if you don't do it, if you don't put in the work and you don't have the passion for it, you can have the best design teachers or art teachers in the world and it won't make a difference.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, so I think you're kind of speaking to that a little bit. You have to have some initiative on your own.
Yeah. I think, well, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. It's intentionality. You know, are you going in flying blind and just taking whatever classes somebody recommends, or do you have an end game in mind? Are you thinking about, you know, what direction is the market headed? What are potential clients or firms, or what are future technologies going to look like potentially? And what are these things that, you know, like you said, motion, you know, flat and packaging, you kind of hit all three. So there's a current, there's a past skill that's still relevant. And then there's a future skill that's going to be really necessary for mocking up animations and things like that to show clients and really wow them. So, you know, I feel like that, if you're going into an experience like school and you're going to spend the money and you're going to have the debt, regardless of whether it's a little or a lot, you know, you should be intentional about knowing what you're getting into. And then on the flip side, I feel like if you have gotten into school and you are studying a major that is different than what you ultimately end up do, I feel like you can't think about that when you're in the middle of it, right?
Yeah.
Like Maria, you can't really, you know, you can't really sit around thinking I'm learning, was it landscape design?
Yeah,
right?
Landscape architecture.
Yeah, I'm learning landscape architecture, but I know I'm not going to use this. You can't think that way. You have to think like, this is what I'm going to do. Right. This is what I want to do. But if you have found yourself outside of it, then, you know, I would be curious, like, what were those transferable skills? You know, what were the things that you learned? Because that's what you have to do at that point. You have to say, you know, I'm finding that there's a market for, you know, graphic design. I studied landscape architecture, but, you know, the direct skills are not necessarily, can't necessarily be used, but these are some principles or some other, you know, useful things that I learned that I can put into practice here, right?
Yeah, there's a lot that were, yeah, like, you just have to kind of, yeah, just think a little outside the box. Like, for example, like, you know, we did a lot of layout, we did a lot of graphics, like, and we had to make really nice graphically, you know, tantalizing pieces, because, you know, you're dealing with like site plans and stuff, and we had to learn how to market ourselves and how to present and like, and to defend our design. And we would present in front of like real, like one time we did a project for like the city of Long Beach. And like, we had like the real officials there, like critiquing, and like we had the engineers critiquing and stuff. So we had to like learn how to explain our process in a way that translated well, and also our graphics had to be on point, our layout had to be good, because if we had these giant, you know, plans that, and if they weren't laid out properly, like the design would get lost. So we learned all like Photoshop, Illustrator, like all that stuff, plus AutoCAD, plus 3D rendering programs. But it's just like a matter of taking that, like you still use those similar programs in graphic design. You're just slightly tweaking, you know, the technique that you're using basically and what you're using it for. So I found that because I had a base knowledge of all that stuff, it really helped me, and I actually started my own little studio right out of college because I was like, yeah, you know, like I actually was more on I was just kind of directing more so than I had brought in other designers and stuff. So, you know, but it was a really interesting process, even learning from them and like seeing how they hash stuff out. And it was just like a really cool process to see how you can transition into that. So yeah, as long as you have a good base, like the principles are strong, like you can learn the software a little better. You can learn the techniques, you know? So the most important thing, especially with design-based fields, is to know design.
Yeah. Yeah, and for me, I feel like, you know, the ability to take feedback is not something you have much of a lead time to learn if you just jump straight into working.
Yeah.
And that is one of the, that is, in my mind, in terms of being employed as a designer, that is one of the most important things. You know, when you're working with a designer who gets emotional about the way that they think something should be designed and cannot reason through it and explain it, and like calmly, coolly, and collected in a calm, cool, and collected sort of way, then you get into trouble. Yeah. When a designer, you know, jumps straight into working and they have to fall back on their own skill set that they learned on their own, and it's very much like, I did this, there's a lot of and I had to work through this myself, which is why I can speak to it. But you know, you have a much harder time not taking things personally when you don't feel like anybody else should get the credit for you knowing what you know. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like going to school is huge for that reason too, because you get an opportunity to be up in front of an entire class and get humiliated in a critique.
Oh yeah.
You know,
many times.
Yeah. With a teacher and with another 30 students. And like, there's that one or two, you know, people in the class who are way better than you, and you know they're way better than you, and they know they're way better than you, and they're going to rub it in your face. And so you learn how to compete, you learn how to talk through things, you learn how to take that feedback. And if you don't go to school, that's something you have to learn, knowing the whole time that you could lose a client if you don't respond correctly, but you also don't know what the correct way to respond is. So, you know, that to me is a huge plus. And it's a reason that I feel like a lot of employers prefer hires for any job to have gone through school, because that you get to learn how to deal with those kind of high stress situations without the threat of not being able to pay your rent, which right. gives you an opportunity to fail a lot more
right.
than if you're just jumping straight in and working.
I think that's an amazing point.
Yeah,
and totally. That's, you know, I didn't think about it until you said that, and I'm thinking that is one of the most valuable things I got by going to school for graphic design specifically, because I was part of this community of designers. And like you said, I felt like, okay, like I'm one of the stronger ones there, you know, not to sound too arrogant, but I knew I wasn't the best one. I knew there was at least like 5 to 10 others I felt like in my classes that were like, oh man, they're better than me. You know, they're better with the software. They're more experienced. They're thinking at a better level than me right now. And so because of that, yeah, I felt like, oh man, what can I do to get to their level? You know, and I would look at their work and critique it and, you know, analyze and say, what can I take away from them? Not just aesthetically, but conceptually and how they think, you know, to make myself a better designer for sure.
Well, and that's another good point there, is because when you're in a classroom, there's the social side of things, right? Like you know that somebody might be better than you, but you are still in a position where you can critique their work,
yes.
you know, as opposed to just joining, a design team and you're a junior designer and there's a senior designer and there's a like kind of a political element to it. You don't want to critique the senior designer too much because you don't want to be put in a position where they don't like you and then they're right. not going to promote you. So oh, yeah. You also are put on more of a level playing field in school where you're able to actually critique people who you know are better than you, but you're all equals because you're all just students, which will boost your confidence because you have the opportunity to actually, you know, participate in critiquing somebody who is farther along than you, but still knows they can get better, which is huge. So, you know, all of this is making me want to go back to school right now.
You know, it there's just so many pros and cons and that we've been talking about, you know, and I think like to your point, just continue on that a little bit. I think if you are not able to go to school, like having that community element, like to kind of take your ego down a little bit, like is really important, like learning teamwork and learning cooperation. And like one of the things I enjoyed most about landscape architecture was that it was super community based. Like the teacher would be like, all right, everybody walk around and just like ask what everyone's doing and like offer, you know, help. And, you know, people come to you like, hey, I saw you do this technique, you know, like, how did you do that? I want to learn that. And you like, be like, yeah, I'll teach you, like step over here for a moment. And like, you'd all teach each other techniques. And I loved that. That was like one of my favorite parts of the program was that kind of community and like not having that ego and just like really helping each other out. And then like when I got out of there, like I started to see that like a lot of people weren't like looking at each other that way. Yeah. And that can really hamper a work environment. So if you are, you know, thinking I'm just going to do this on my own and learn myself, just to like engage in community environments and get used to that a little bit. Cause I think that'll help round out anybody who's looking to get into any creative field lab area. Yeah. So
yeah, definitely. I mean, the con on the other side of that is that the real world is not that nice.
Exactly.
You know, so you might learn how to take critique. You may not learn how to take politically charged critique from somebody who actually has a reason to, you know, want to see you fail, for lack of a better word. And yeah. So I feel like there is a, you come out of school with a lot of skill, you come out of school with a lot of resilience, but there are certain things that you just can't learn until you're out there and until you realize that, you know, it is a little bit more, it is just a little bit more mean in the real world, or it can be, or it can be more passive aggressive, or it can be all of these things where, you know, there are guarantees in school that you're not guaranteed once you get out of school. Absolutely. You know,
that's an understatement.
Yeah.
But I feel like another thing that's good is it does help you figure out your role. You know, if you're working in a classroom and you realize, hey, I'm really good at carrying out in a group project. I'm really good at carrying out the vision of somebody who's got this really good creative vision, but I'm not really good at the creative vision part. Then you can start positioning yourself for, you know, I'm going to be a UX designer, or I'm going to be a, I want to be just a designer, or like a senior level, but not a creative director, not an art director. I don't want to go for that. And I feel like without it, you kind of just wiggle until you find a place that you stick, which is good too. I mean, that there's value in that as well, but, knowing your strengths is something that, you have to really fake if you haven't gone. And again, I'm saying all of this as someone who didn't go. So every critique of like the not going to school thing is me critiquing myself, right. in a lot of ways. But you do have to do that. You have to figure out on the job whether or not you want to continue pushing for something or continue pushing for another position. And you kind of have to pretend you know that you're ready for the next thing, even though you know you aren't.
Right. Happens all the time.
Yeah.
And it happens even if you've gone to school. Yes. But I think it's, you're more likely to know your skills if you've had an opportunity to test them in a higher education environment.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. But like on that note, you know, kind of talking about like how to grow and how to teach yourself. You know, that's, I kind of want to pivot and talk, kind of focus on that for a little bit, you know, because there's some tangible ways to kind of teach ourselves, like maybe going on the lynda.com or skillshare.com.
Yeah.
YouTube.
Or YouTube. Exactly. So there's like those really tangible, obvious ways. But I don't know, Nate, can you speak on maybe some other ways, maybe not so obvious, you could really push and teach yourself like outside of an academic environment?
I would say volunteer. You know, actually, a lot of people have very strong feelings about free work. I'm one of them. I think you should do it.
I'm glad I'm not the only one that thinks that. Sorry to interrupt, but I totally feel the same way. Yeah, go for it. For a good cause, like, especially.
Yeah, and I feel like if you're young enough, if you have another job and you're trying to get into design, you know, don't pretend like you deserve, you know, $75 an hour just because you read an article by Mike Monteiro, who's one of my favorite design writers.
Yeah, he's awesome.
But still, I think there's nothing wrong with going out and doing some free work, but I think you should be targeted with it. You know, find some, don't go do free work for Coca-Cola or Disney, go do free right. work for, you know, a local nonprofit or a mom and pop business that can't afford somebody yet. Or,
yeah. Like Aaron Draplin did like that thing for Cobra Dogs kind of thing, like
right.
totally for free.
Yeah. Yeah,
he
exactly.
still does stuff like that for people who really need it though. Not, yeah. Like you said, like he gets paid six figures to do stuff for the White House, but then he'll do Cobra Dogs for free. Kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think that's the point. You know, I mean, the flip side of that coin is if you are working for a company like Coca-Cola or you are doing work for Disney, then charge what you're worth. And if they, you know, if you say your hourly rate is 40 and they say that they can only pay you 30, then, you know, I guess you decide whether or not you're willing to accept that. But don't work for free for a company that you know has money. But still, right. an easy way to learn how to deal with potential clients is to do free work for people who need it and probably can't afford it, and or whose cause you believe in and are willing to donate your time for. So, you know, I think that is one really good way to learn. I think finding meetup groups and attending those groups and doing side projects with those groups. I mean, we've talked about this a lot. We don't have to talk about it a ton on this, but ProxArt was huge for all of us.
Right.
You know, back in that time period in 2008 to 2011 really was huge because it felt like a business. It functioned largely like a business. Everybody had roles and we were all able to, you know, learn from one another. And that was huge.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
I feel like donating some time to companies or organizations that can't afford it. I feel like doing a side project with a group and, or just attending meetups is really big. And then I think the third one is probably, you know, read and watch as much as you can. You know, there are really, really good resources out there, whether it's the A Book Apart stuff, or it's, you know, Creative Mornings, or it's TED Talks, or it's lynda.com, or it's whatever. You know, you could have a full semi-formal education without ever paying for it. The only thing is, you know, you don't have the benefit of the mentorship in a lot of cases through those avenues. But those would be my big three.
Those are great. Yeah. I mean, those are right on.
But actually, I would say the fourth one, now that I just said the word out loud and it made me think of it, is if you can find one, find a mentor.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
If there's somebody that you can just say, hey, I want to follow you around for a month. Like, I don't need anything from you. I just want to learn, and like, I'll send emails for you and do whatever. I think that can be invaluable, you know. And a lot of people will say this, but it's really true. And again, we saw this a lot with ProxArt. You can literally email anybody, and they will
Oh, yeah.
So true.
They will, like, 60% of the time get back to you. And some of them will say, no, I don't have time. But a lot of people are actually really willing to get on the phone with you if you come across as somebody who's willing to learn. And so I did that a lot. I became best friends with the CEOs of the companies that I worked at and would just, like, do as much as I could to learn from them. And then I tried to surround myself. So here's the fifth point, because I just keep coming up with stuff.
We love
the
it. Fifth, yeah.
Keep it coming.
The fifth one would just be, you know, as far as that group of people that you surround yourself with is concerned, find people that you know are going to want to keep learning. If you surround yourself with people that are going to encourage you to stay inside your comfort zone, you're not going to get out of it, you know. And so find those meetup groups, find those people that you're going to work on side projects with and stick with them as long as they are learning and pushing themselves, and leave when they stop learning and pushing themselves. You know, I think that's huge.
Yeah. These are excellent, excellent points. And, this is almost like you use it as like a formula, like with this combination, you can really infiltrate the industry and really get inside other people's heads and really build that community, and also gets you used to putting yourself out there, because that's hard for a lot of creatives, especially when maybe they don't have as much confidence because they're like teaching themselves and stuff. But I mean, there's so much you can learn. And honestly, like I learned a lot in school, but like nothing compares to what I learned in the real world. Like it was my favorite type of learning, is to just get out there and try it, you know, try things that make you uncomfortable and talk to people who are doing things that you want to do. And I think that's really great. Great points, Nate.
Yeah. And I think what you both are saying, especially you, Nate, is community. I completely agree with you. And I think it's an amazing point. Find a community and get involved. Find a mentor, get involved. Like participate in the community. I think that's a great learning experience in itself, because of social media. I think we think that this creative community in general is just huge, and it's not at the end of the day. We, you know,
right.
It's not that big of a community, and I bring that up because we're all here to help each other at the end of the day. I know that, you know, you've helped me figure out some things and vice versa at times.
Yeah.
And I'm always looking for mentors, and people ask me for help on some things, and you know, Maria and I are helping each other with our work. So my point is that we're all here to learn from each other, because, you know, like things like AIGA and, you know, Creative South and, like you said, Creative Mornings, etc. They create a community where it's clear that everyone is there to help each other. Like anything from getting clients to learning a new technique to just talking to people. And I think that is so valuable beyond the obvious things like, you know, going on YouTube or Skillshare and picking up the actual skills and techniques, because I think being a creative, just knowing how to do something, is really only a small fraction of what it takes to really thrive as a creative professional, you know?
Yeah. I mean, but there are two different reasons to do those things. The, you know, buffing up your skills is really only you can do that,
yeah.
You know,
right, right.
Like only, you know, you can take yourself as far as your skills can take you. Sometimes your skills are interpersonal, and that means that, you know, you can join a company and climb the ranks really quickly, even if you don't have a really well-defined skill set. I would argue that that's probably more me. Yeah. Which is why I don't really do much design anymore, even though I understand the principles and you know, I'm up on all the trends and all of that kind of stuff. My skills are not best used by, you know, sitting and designing things. But for a designer, for somebody who wants to be a designer, you know, it's important that you practice your scales, so to speak, and get it down and make sure that your skill sets are sharp. But on the flip side, you have to know how to work with other people. And if you can't do that, then you're not going to be employable.
Oh yeah, you know? Definitely.
It's the, I don't know, Zach, give me a really good basketball analogy for this.
Well,
because I can't do it, but it's give me a good example of a really good player who's not good on a team, and so the team suffers, because that's what I'm talking about.
Well, I think that's happened all the time in sports history, for sure, current and past, where there's been a really talented player, you know, whether it's basketball, football, or baseball, but it was kind of a jerk. So that's why he ends up on like 15 teams in like 14 seasons, because, you know, no one wants him around, basically, even though, you know, his skill set would actually probably help the team. And I think, you know, even though that you see that a lot in sports, it's important to have a good team. I think it's true for the creative world as well. You know, in the sense where I've heard time and time again, like an art director or creative director say something like, look, you know, I'm willing to help and teach a junior designer a little bit, you know, and help them get up to speed even on some software skills. But, you know, I'm only going to do that for someone I want to sit next to for the next couple years. They even say, like, I'd rather hire a less quote unquote skilled nice person than a really talented jerk, and I think that goes a long way. I keep telling myself, like, look, just try to be a nice person. I try to tell myself all the time, and I think, you know, that I probably got hired at where I work more because I was just like really nice to the people and the person that hired me, and like he knew me as a nice guy more than as like a really talented designer, you know. Like I was to be totally transparent, I was originally like hired to be a project manager, really, and then he was like, we know Dami, he's a mutual friend, and he's like, oh, like you're a good designer too, let's get you designing things. Like he basically didn't know, like he didn't even care. He just like, you know what? I remember Zach being a nice guy when he did some stuff with Nate back in the day, you know. So I'm not trying to tell everyone that I'm just the nicest, perfect person ever.
But you are.
Maria knows that I'm not. You know, no. I could be a jerk sometimes. Don't get me wrong, but like I just bring all this up because I try to focus just as much as being good to other people, just as much, if not more, than, you know, being good at the skills and the software and all that stuff.
Yeah, one of my favorite, to switch metaphors, you know, one of my favorite quotes is from a guy who some people may not think is that awesome, but I will say is like a guilty pleasure of mine in terms of music. But John Mayer is like a freakishly good guitar player.
Yeah, definitely.
And one thing he constantly talks about is it's always more fun to watch somebody who you know is really good show restraint.
Oh, yeah.
You know, right. like it's always really fun to watch a guitar player that, you know, could probably shred like with his guitar behind his back, play really, really tasty, restrained blues licks, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that to go back to the school thing, I think one thing that school teaches you and then one thing with working in the real world and jumping in on your own, if you can take it and you've got the humility to do it, I think one thing that both of those scenarios can teach you is when to go all out and when to when to go all out and just show off, because there are scenarios that require that. But then it can also show you that in most cases, you have to actually restrain yourself and just know how to sell it. You know how to point out the good things and move on to the next thing. But that depends on the circumstance. And I think that, you know, barring some of the objective reasons why I think school is can be really tough, I think it's really valuable.
Yeah, it depends on the person, you know. I mean, it depends where you're at in your life and you know, do you have the extra time to invest? I mean, I think Zach is a good example that, you know, maybe it's never too late to go back, you know?
Yeah, I'm 33 in like, 13, 14 days, and I graduated college at 31. So I'm a big believer of it's never too late to go back to school. And it's really never too late. Forget school. It's never too late to keep learning and to educate yourself. I think the worst kind of creatives and even the worst kind of, you know, working people is the kind of people that are like, oh, I've made it. Yeah. I've arrived. I know everything now, so I'm good.
You have to have a next step. I mean, you know, if you ever feel like I've accomplished what I need to accomplish to feel happy with myself, you know, that's where you kind of start to wither on the vine. And so I think that, you know, the ideal scenario is you are learning to love whatever stage you find yourself in, and school can teach you to do that. You know, school can teach you to say, yes, this project sucks, and I know I have two other projects that I'm already late on and that I need to be working on, but I need to push through this one, and I need to be proud of my work. And so I'm going to work for, you know, four nights without sleep and, you know, jack myself up on coffee and get through all three or four of these things, because I know that when I get to the end of this two or this 4 years, then I get to start all over.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I don't get to rest on the fact that I felt accomplished. But for now, I'm going to feel very accomplished with this, and I'm going to let myself jump from accomplishment feeling unaccomplished, always knowing that there's going to be something for me to conquer next. And I think that whether you have that, I think it, you know, like we've been saying, it's all about the mindset. If your mindset is, I want to learn, I want to keep learning, and school is where I think, in order for me to sort out what I want to do, school is where I need to go. It fits my learning style best, then good for you. Go for it. Be smart about how you get your money. Be smart about how you, you know, structure your loans and the payback for that. Because then this is something we can talk about on another podcast, but I really feel like design salaries are going to plateau in the next 5 years and then start to decline a little bit, but I don't want to be a doomsday guy.
So whatever. I quit now. Gosh. So I can't get a Ferrari later in life, you know, if I keep doing this.
Oh, you can still get a Ferrari, but maybe not a Maserati.
Okay, fair enough. Because I'm only in it for the money.
So. Yeah, you can sell.
Well, aren't we all? But I feel like, you know, if that's the goal, then and school is the best way for you to learn, then go do that. And if you feel like you have to have the, oh my goodness, I could fail and not be able to pay my bills, economics incentives, then in that case, it might be better for you to just jump straight in and figure it out, or you can do both.
That's true.
So.
Yeah, no, I think it's a perfect way to kind of start having some closing thoughts here, because I think that was kind of a great kind of sum up of the whole conversation we've had today. Yeah, so
agreed.
Yeah, I just want to give Maria the floor here to kind of close things out here a little bit.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think what we've discussed here today is that really there's a lot of different factors to consider when you're taking either approach, or like you said, a hybrid of both. But the key is that if it's something you really, really want to do, you'll get there. You know, it's just a matter of being open and, like you said, staying on top of your skills, staying on top of your learning, and finding out what would be the best for you. And I think there's a lot of people out there who are doing really well without having gone to school. And especially if you want to be an entrepreneurial creative, you know, you can you don't necessarily have to go to school to learn that. Like, sometimes you're a little more I don't know, like you're thinking a little more abstractly. And so you might be able to package that into a business, or, you know, work with other creatives to create an entity. But there's really no, let's say, like right or wrong answer. So I'm really like, I think everything, all the points you made were really great, Nate.
Yeah, definitely. And it's my kind of final thought here is just that for me, what works for me is be obsessed. I mean, and be really passionate about what you want to do, and how you pursue that passion can be through school, can be self-taught, could be a myriad of different ways. But I think if you're obsessed and you're passionate and you really want, you know, a creative life for yourself, I think it's doable. I mean, ask Maria. I have design on the brain probably too much. I would say don't do it like at my level to the point where I'm like, that's all I think about. But you have to be super passionate. If you have that, you're going to find a way to make it work, in my opinion.
Agreed.
You know, so, I mean, that's kind of where I'm at. Nate, do you have any final thoughts on the topic in general?
I would loop back to actually your podcast from last week, or I guess I don't know when this is going to release, so maybe it was 2 weeks ago, but the last podcast where you talked about, you know, you don't have to be a starving artist anymore. I would say, you know, go in with your eyes wide open, make your decision based on what is going to be consistent with what you want to be doing for the majority of your time as an adult. You're going to spend 40 plus hours a week on something. You should feel good about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't sell yourself short. And just constantly be looking for ways to learn. Even if you're in school, be, you know, those five things that I outlined for people who are not going to school, you know, do some free work for companies or organizations that can't afford it but can use it or that you're passionate about. You know, join a meetup, start a side project, watch, read, listen, and learn as much as you can. Find a mentor and then surround yourself with other people who are going to be learning. You can do those things if you're still in school. And if you're not in school and you're not doing those things, I'd say get on it as quickly as you possibly can, because that's going to make you more employable and more desirable from an employment perspective, because you're going to just have a lot going on and you're going to be on top of stuff. So that's all I got.
Cool.
But this has been a lot of fun.
Yeah. We always love talking to you, man. Mm-hmm. And
feeling is mutual.
Yeah, we definitely appreciate that. And where can we find you, you know, online, on social media? Yeah, I mean, I've always been a big admirer of what you've done with Toy. So, you know, can you let our audience know where we could find both you and your agency online?
Yeah, definitely. So Toy, we actually just redesigned our website.
It looks really great, by the way.
Yeah, awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really, really happy with it. It, you know, when you're a design agency, it takes forever to update your own stuff.
Yeah.
Dude, it took us like 6 months just to do like our homepage. So yes.
Yeah, this redesign is probably 13 months in the making, and it took way too long. But thankfully, that's because we're busy with other client work, and so I can't really complain about it. But
right.
I'm really happy with where it landed. There's a very, you know, if it takes that long to design something, there's a very good chance that it could go off the rails and just turn into a Frankenstein thing because there's no consistency.
Yeah,
but I think it turned out really well. We've got some new work that we just finished for Red Bull and a couple other companies on there as far as our case studies are concerned. So toi.io is where you can check out that. You can also find Toy at Toy Shop on Twitter, / Toy Shop on Facebook, / Toy on Dribbble, and that's toi again. And then for me, I'm at Nathan Ryan without any A's, which a lot of people just say is Nathan Ryan, but that's that's my website, nthnryn.com. You can find me at that on Twitter, on Instagram, and on Facebook. And then the last thing I'll say here is I'm getting ready to actually start a little bit of a I'll use this term loosely, but kind of a lecture tour. Cool. On the topic.
That's awesome.
On the topic of the future of the creative class. So I'll be in DC in a week. And I'm speaking at a WeWork there. And then I'm going to do a couple more like lunch and learn type events in Austin in the month of August. And then at the end of September, I'm giving a big lecture at the downtown WeWork location in partnership with a couple other companies. And those partnerships are still coming together. But it's going to be pretty big. And then we're looking to take that to LA, San Francisco, probably Chicago and New York through the end of the year.
That's great.
So
yeah.
I'll keep you guys posted on that one.
Yeah, I was about to say, please let us know when you're back out here in LA doing that, because we'd love to come out and maybe record a little bit. We do like these little like pre-lecture, post-lecture little
Yeah.
Podcast tidbits. So we'd love to talk to you again when you're out here doing that. That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And cool. If you want to, you know, if you got show notes here and you want to put a link in there, the basis for this lecture, and it'll be modified quite a bit, but the basis for the lecture is going to be that post I wrote on Medium a couple months ago.
Yeah.
It was, are we designing ourselves out of a job? It's that one.
Oh, yeah,
so definitely.
We'll put a link for sure.
Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes for sure, along awesome. With all the links and the social media handles you just gave us. And,
cool.
And then on that note, for our listeners, don't forget, we have our own website now, creativehoney.org.
Which also looks amazing.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we put it together fairly quickly just to, you know, just give the podcast a home and then give it, you know, have some support articles. And we're looking forward to have you do some writing for the blog too. We're excited for that.
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
Yeah, so you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, creativehoney.org, and SoundCloud. Maria, did I miss anything?
No, if you have any questions, comments, you can feel free to email us at hello@creativehoney.org. And if you like what we're doing, feel free to give us 5 stars on iTunes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, Nate, thanks so much, man, for talking to us. It's been really
great.
Thanks
for having me.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, we look forward to having you again. Yeah, no, it's great. We need to do this more often. And
we should.
Yeah, no, we definitely love having you on every time, man. So
yeah.
we appreciate it.
I'm down. Let's do this again in a month.
Yeah, yeah, let's do it.
All right, guys. Thank you.
All right,
man.
Thank you so much,
have a good
Nate.
One.
Bye-bye.
Well, we had an awesome time interviewing Nate.
Yeah, it was great. It was a great conversation for sure.
So, yeah, we are going to be, you know, hearing more from Nate and seeing more from Nate. He's got some cool stuff coming up for us in the near future.
Yeah, and you can find him on his website, toy.io. And we'll have this all in the show notes, and he mentioned it as well. And just so you don't forget, you can find us now on our brand new site, creativehoney.org, where we're posting articles and all the podcasts, past and present. And if you have any ideas for the show or the podcast, the blog, whatever, you can find us at, or email us, I should say, at hello@creativehoney.org. We would love to hear from you. And then finally, you can find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, and more importantly, iTunes. And please help us grow the podcast by giving us a good rating and a nice review so we could gain some traction. We'd love to get some support from you guys.
Yeah, so thank you so much for listening. We're gonna have more awesome stuff coming your way soon.
Thanks, guys.